if I ever get to the point in my life where I'm eating microchips and Pop-Tarts exclusively, you have my permission to euthanize me. Welcome to the Canned Laughter Podcast. I'm Mark, and tonight joining me, as ever, I guess we can say as ever at this point since we're four podcasts in, is Simon.
Hello.
And Steph.
Hello.
So guys, good week, bad week? Indifferent week?
I'm going to say indifferent week.
Yeah, it was alright.
indifferent to
a week filled with endless mediocrity.
Yeah, wildly mediocre, probably the best description of my week. Much like, you know, my lovemaking abilities.
Oh, this just calls for us to get your wife on this podcast to corroborate this now.
She's not home at the minute. I don't know where she is. It's like half an inch of snow outside, so the entirety of the city is blocked. It's just retarded. It took me 3 hours to get home. I left at 4 and I got in when I joined this podcast.
So I left for work this morning, it was cold. By the time I get back, it's like apocalyptic conditions, like some kind of nuclear winter settled over Leeds. And I'm trudging through the snow, trying to get to my flat with like other people who look despaired and lost, just going, oh, I just want to be at home. And like they've been caught out in some terrible adverse weather conditions.
Like snow.
It's amazing what like, yeah, it's a small smattering of frozen water.
Yeah, and everyone just goes, oh shit, the bed, we're gonna die.
It's worse in the car. I'm 3 hours in the car and I really need to pee after the first hour. So I held it for an extra 2 hours.
It was, you don't have like an emergency pee bottle?
I did, but it was filled with emergency water. And I didn't want to be in that situation where I had to decide between dumping the emergency water, which is life, and, you know, peeing, which is, you know,
I really, really thought you were going to say the emergency water bottle was filled with emergency pee.
After you said water was emergency life, I kind of thought you were going to say the pee was emergency death.
but surely
the solution to this is to have two bottles.
Well, yeah, I mean, the trouble is
one that you just pee in.
Well, that's it. But the realisation is that I got home. I realised I have like two extra bottles just knocking about in the back seat. I didn't even realise they were there. So I could have peed 2 hours before and not had to do the truffle shuffle up the stairs to try and get to the loo.
See, this was something I was telling Simon about like a couple of months ago. I was saying like, do you ever do the toilet dance? Which is like where you really have to pee, but you just can't go for some reason. So you're like jogging on the spot and doing like little shuffles and like really trying to hold it in while also kind of moving around in very strange ways.
From what I've
kind
heard,
of like me at a nightclub.
From what I've heard, the dance is actually very counterproductive. Like the more you move, the more difficult it becomes to hold it in.
Really? So yeah. I've been doing it wrong all these years.
Yeah, this is, apparently the best thing to do is just to stay very still. Like basically, treat your full bladder like a bear in the nearby bushes. If you move,
well, if there was a bear in the nearby bushes, I'd probably be pissing myself, so.
Ruining analogies with the guys.
So we're going to like create a separate sub-podcast where we just ruin analogies like, oh, if many hands make light work, but too many cooks ruin the broth, then how many chefs do I have in my restaurant?
I came back at a particularly weird time. What restaurant? Why? Who?
We're ruining analogies.
Wait, okay. You left.
Yeah, sorry. Phone call. Wife. Emergency.
Well,
did she run out?
She's still alive.
Well,
we know that much.
Well, yeah, maybe. Who knows? I apologise. I didn't mean to just, you know, take off. But
that's
I did.
That's all right. Well, just put some mm-hmms in post. No one will notice.
Yeah. Good point. No, shut up.
I did that once when I failed my first driving test due to a horrendously stupid white van man and had to mount the pavement to avoid dying. Which, in all fairness, I think I should have passed the test for, you know, keeping myself and the examiner alive. But I knew that exactly the flow of the conversation it would take when I told my mum I'd failed. So I just basically put the phone on my desk. Like, well, I told her, "Oh, mum, I failed my driving test," and just kind of let her talk whilst I booked my second test online. And just every now and then leaning in, going, "Mm-hmm, yes," and then click, 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 like confirm booking. Does that make me a bad son?
Yes.
Yes.
That's good to know.
There's not even room for discussion here. You're a terrible son.
I could be better.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a positive spin on this for you, but I really can't. Sorry.
Well, it was just, I didn't want to be told for an hour, like, not, you know, my inadequacies when driving.
Are we talking like a full actual 60-minute hour without hyperbole or exaggeration?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, we found a grey area.
Yeah, all right. At this point, it's sort of bitch shut up, I suppose.
Because I knew the call would last for an extraordinary amount of time, just to be like, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear you failed your test. Are you okay?" Is what, you know, I imagined a normal parent would have said, but, you know, I've got a special mum. So I got many, not a lecture as such, but her musings and life learnings thus far and how I can carry this forward and you know, make myself a better person through to the next test if I wish to take it. And I was just,
Well, yeah. I hope you at least reversed the call charge.
What, halfway through? Sorry, not the call, you're paying for this now.
Oh. We're at what I think is the halfway point, you take it from here.
So, is this the loophole that's got me out of being a bad son? I might have been ignoring my mum for an hour, but at least I paid for the call.
It's you know how two wrongs don't make a right? Well, it's like the two wrongs kind of cancelled each other out and became the sort of weird neutral stalemate thingy. Which is admittedly not as catchy as two wrongs making a right, but hey, analogy ruiners.
What? Yeah. Two wrongs don't make a right, but three lefts do.
Yeah, they do.
That's my awful, awkward joke of the podcast.
Every week. It's like fucking clockwork with you.
No, seriously, like, the BBC had an article like 3 weeks ago saying that people who make puns and bad jokes like that, it's a neurological disorder. So I'm in the clear. It's a brain problem.
No, you're not. That's like me saying fat is a medical condition. It's not. I just need to stop eating shit. You need to stop making terrible fucking jokes.
Oh, come on.
And I mean that with love. I don't mind your jokes so much, but you need to stop making them because you'll drive everybody away from you, including me.
Yeah, no. One of these days, I'll, you know, maybe I should have like a bad joke support group, but
Punners Anonymous.
No, hang on. I'll come up with a pun for that later.
I can think of was
a punimus. But a punimus isn't quite as good as I'd want it to be.
A punimus.
Punimus. The first step in the 12-step pun anonymous program. It'd be punanon.
Punanon.
And the first step would be admitting you have a problem without making it into a pun.
Oh, that's impossible. It's just such a good chance. It's the perfect setup. Which is why a program like this would never work.
So many puns. I'm stuck. I can't help.
I think the only way we could get around this problem, the only way that we could
killing
ever
all the pun people,
a pun is anonymous or panonymous or whatever you want to call it, is if in the future the counsellors can all be robots or people with no sense of humour. Basically, I think I've just found a great job opportunity for people with no sense of humour.
You see, no, I think you need a sense of humour to be able to tell when a pun is just god-awful. Because, don't get me wrong, there are times when puns are, you know, useful and necessary. Like when you're building a shop, you need a name for the shop, you come up with a witty pun, that's fine. It's the people who just drop it in, like Mark, into everyday conversation that just makes you want to punch someone.
Like the fish and chip shop in York, the Codfather.
Yes.
Oh God, really?
Or yeah, Friar Tuck's.
Oh yeah.
See, it worked. Restaurants actually—that's not a bad idea. A lot of restaurants need it. Maybe that's a business opportunity for you, Mark. Maybe you're in the wrong business entirely. You've become a professional shop namer.
Yeah, like shop and punnerer.
Shop punnerer, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be a shop punnerer.
Opening a dry cleaners, touching cloth. Hey!
or wash dry story.
Yeah.
You know, instead of West Side Story.
I got it.
I wasn't sure. It was a bit of a stretch. I was like, has he really made that bad a pun, or am I just thinking too hard? But no, apparently you had made that bad a pun.
It was that bad a pun.
Get out.
Right. Now, I want to... This is going to bug you, because I'm going to break this wall that we've erected between us and the one listener we have and talk about the list of topics, because the one on there that I really want to talk about is Canada, because it's been on there since I came to this podcast. Simon, please talk about Canada.
Well, me and a couple of friends... We are going to Canada in about a month and a bit. And it was going to be booked last weekend, but then it wasn't, because one of us, not me, one of us was like, oh no, I can't do this weekend. Even all that bullshit.
How many of you, how many in the group are going to Canada?
Three of us.
Are you staying? Is this like a permanent thing, or is it a...
No, this is just...
No, I don't mean that in a go-away way. I mean, in a you're going out there. I have friends who have gone out there and never come back. I didn't want it to be that situation.
It's like you're Canada's problem now, Simon.
It is not currently that situation. We're going for about 2 weeks.
Plus, you know, the Skype conversation would be really awful to organise.
Yeah, it would. Hey, guys, can you get up, like, at 7 a.m?
The
times of maths in my head is probably wrong. Plus, Toronto's only like 5 hours away.
Time zones confuse me. I don't. Anyway, Canada.
Why don't we have like one Earth time? Why isn't that not been agreed yet?
Because people suck.
Because I know they were going to like eliminate like GMT and GMT plus one and just make it one time so that like people who did business with like people in the UK who did business with people in France didn't have to add an hour.
Yeah, it should just be GMT.
Yeah.
None of this plus one bollocks, it's just GMT. That's what it is. It always has been GMT.
And then if a business wants to shift its opening hours, it can just shift its opening hours.
Yeah.
It might seem a little confusing, but at least the change is brought to the forefront. It's not like, oh wait, no, 1 o'clock doesn't mean what it used to mean, and in a few months it's going to mean something else again. It's like, no, 1 o'clock means 1 o'clock, but this shop now opens at 8. All right.
Well, they're saying that, like, when we move our clocks forward and backwards, we don't do that at the same time as most other countries, because I know America does it like either a month or so, like after we do, so that adds further confusion to this whole, you know, what time is it where question.
Yeah,
what time is where it, Mr. Wolf? Problem.
What time zone?
Childhood
games for the modern era.
Problems you never thought you'd have. What time is it, Mr. Wolf? Well, I'm in Beijing and Charlie's in Greece. So, I don't really know. All I know is that when I see him, I'm going to eat the fucker. That's what I'm going to do. See, it teaches you about time zones and stay away from wolves. Of which I hear there are some in Canada. Please go on, Simon. See, flawlessly. It's brilliant. That's what I do.
You got that back. Well done.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah. So, the plan is we're basically going to three cities, one of which is not in Canada, but... I'll get to that. We're staying in Chicago first because we got a whole bunch of friends over there. So we're spending a few days over there. Plus, one of us has been over to Chicago before and they know all the places to go, so that's kind of covered.
You got a guy on the inside.
Yes, yes, we have a guy on the inside of Operation Infiltrate Chicago as a tourist.
Infiltrate the States and Canada. Maybe, but probably more in Canada than the... It's not a good... It's a working title.
The United Infiltrates. God damn
so
it.
So from Chicago, you're going to try and cross the border illegally into Canada then?
Well,
I don't even know where Chicago is in relation to Canada.
It's quite near the top because it's near the Great Lakes, isn't it?
Yeah, there's the Great Lakes, and Chicago's kind of on the southwest-ish. Of any American listeners, please don't correct my American geography. It's bad, I know. But it's kind of on the southwest of the Great Lakes, and definitely Ontario and Canada very much dips down below what you think of as the sort of line cutting across the Canada-US border. Toronto's pretty far south.
I'm looking at it now. You could easily paddle across the border. Don't do that.
I wasn't planning to.
Anyone on
I
border think... control... Don't watch out for him because he might be smuggling something, but don't stop him because he's going to paddle across into Canada.
I might try crossing the border legally first, and if that doesn't work, then I'll try the canoe.
Swim.
Yeah, and then
it's like, Simon, why are you bringing all the scuba gear with you to America?
Well, I really like quicksand diving.
I was going to go snorkeling.
Anyway, Chicago, and then...
Then when we get into actually Canada, we are spending a few days in Toronto and a few days in Montreal.
Nice.
And then we fly back to this tiny pokey island.
Hey, this tiny pokey island rocks. In the broadest sense of the term.
In the very broadest sense of the term. Well, we've got tea and nectar
racism.
Points.
Tea and nectar points. Can someone explain a nectar point to me? Because I was thinking about this the other day. Because I keep going into Sainsbury's and they keep offering to give me nectar points. But I don't... What can I do with them? Are they like fuel points? Or do I trade them in for like varying degrees of nectarism? Like, is there a gold nectar card owner who, you know... No, platinum. The black platinum nectar card owner that you just put a name into a box and that person dies.
all I know is that every time I go into Sainsbury's, I get nectar points and then nothing else happens.
From what I know of it, I think nectar points are sort of... They're like a sort of redeemable... store point system where whenever you buy something from that store, if you have a nectar card, you get some nectar points as like a sort of, they're just arbitrary scores or points that are applied based on how much you spend, and then you can redeem them at a later date. It's like a kind of, I think it's like an obfuscate discount that relies on you going, ah, oh, fuck it.
You see, I think I prefer my version better.
Yeah,
like a gold membership, you get a part ownership in a steak restaurant somewhere in Quebec.
It's the finest moose steak.
Yeah, it makes a change from horse. Hey, topical.
Well done. Yeah. That was pretty good. I like that.
So, I actually did have a cottage pie last night, and it didn't taste that beefy, so I'm a bit worried.
Oh, who cares? Horse is good for you. It is.
I know a guy.
You are the scientist.
I know a guy who's had horse meat, and he says it's really nice. So
it is nice. It's delicious. It's like eating meat.
Yeah.
Would you believe it?
If it's been true for like the past 10 years, whatever it is they say, no one's complained in that interim 10 years until it's like,
no,
now that you tell us it's horse meat, now we have to feel angry about it. It's like, well.
Fuck you.
Just say it's horse meat, make it cheaper, make it not contain some kind of disease, and then we'll just eat it. Really, that's
it contain disease?
Well, I'm not saying it contain disease, but I'm saying you might as well go to sort of work with the regulation systems to be like, look, this is horse meat, but it's good horse meat, so you don't need to worry. It's like,
but the thing that like befuddled me though, like what was like 2 weeks ago or whenever it was like, oh yeah, there's a small percentage of horse DNA. So they weren't like, when he was saying it's like proper horse meat, it's just like somehow some DNA got in there, like as if Richard Attenborough had been like injecting it, hoping to make some velociraptors out of it.
No, it's clearly
pies, but
clearly a horse jizzed in one of the bloody batches. I mean, it's, you know.
And then they find out that like this Finder stuff is like 100% like all the meat in it is horse meat, and it's just, it's almost as if like some French person's gone in like, ah, oh, if the English they do not eat horse, but we love the horse, they will now find out why it's so delicious. And
you they know, will pay the
cackling
horse
in a French way.
Certainly before the revelation of it being 100%, I took a more innocuous view of it. I thought that just because it had been a pretty cold December and January, that a whole bunch of horses got really cold and they came into the Finder's factory to warm up, and they kind of sat down on a conveyor belt, because that being machinery was one of the warmest bits, and then they got complacent and fell in.
I love the idea of like three horses just talking. This is nice, isn't it? Warm in here. Oh,
it's
the floor
very warm
moves.
In here. I thought, oh, it's very chilly out there.
What's that noise? Oh, maybe it's there to give us hugs. That's it, Jeff. Yes, it must be there to give us hugs.
It's the Uggs machine. Apparently, all these horses are from Yorkshire.
Clearly, that's what happens.
The way I imagine it is, you know, in the Wallace and Gromit close shave where they get all the sheep on the conveyor belt near, like, going into the mincing machine with all the spikes.
Yeah.
Kind of see it like that, like some guys like backed a truck, like some partially sighted Frenchman has, you know, thought he'd herded a bunch of cows into his van and then has like unloaded a bunch of horses instead. And yeah, they've gone onto this conveyor belt heading towards some crusher, and all the horses are just thinking, oh man. I mean, like, but you're right, it's like, it's not done anyone any harm. I mean, no one's like turned into a centaur or anything like that. So.
Then the solution to that is obviously more horse.
Yeah, no, this, like, that's a good point. Yeah. Why isn't there more horse in our diet? We need to see more centaurs in our society.
Oh God.
Well, this comes back to why I made the point about it being disease-free. It's clearly the problem is not that it was horse meat as such. The problem is that it was horse meat and they said it was beef. It was just straight up lying about what it was we were buying. That's the problem.
Yeah, but that's like Mark being online and telling somebody he's tall and dark and handsome. I mean, it's just not... You've got to take everything with a pinch of salt.
What
when
he's...
That's not bad.
When he's short, white and passable at best.
Yeah, exactly.
If it makes you feel any better, I'm also passable at best.
That stop reading my Match.com profile.
Oh, dear me. Are you actually on Match.com?
I was for a little while until... I was going to save all this up for a belated Valentine's Day special next week. Because, obviously, we're recording this a day before. And it'll actually go out tomorrow, Valentine's Day, but I thought we'd save up the horrendous love stories for the
episode that doesn't go out on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it'll be our belated love special.
Oh, what? that means I've got to spend the next week trying to come up with witty, urbane commentaries on love and previous relationships.
Well, you know, I thought because, you know, we're all, you know, you are happily married. I am the, you know, the child of divorce who, you know, just doesn't give a shit about things. And then and Simon is obviously our man-seeking man portion.
Really,
so we really got
wonder
all
what
the bases
you're
going to
say then.
Yeah, I am. So, you mentioned OkCupid. I just can't think that why OK is it like what passable Cupid was taken?
No. I think you're missing. There's like a comma that says OkCupid. I'm ready for this. Or OkCupid, hit me. I think.
All right. Yeah. OkCupid, ready for you to stab me with your metaphorical arrows.
It's not like they like the domain names for like best Cupid, awesome Cupid. And, you know, all that was taken said to be like, you know, mediocre Cupid, okay Cupid, let's just be friends Cupid.
Wait, go back one. He's at that meeting, he's like, wait, no, okay Cupid sounds brilliant. Okay Cupid and his working colleague Friendo.
It would be okay Cupid and the mayor of Friendzone.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be such an awful dating website. Be like the mayor, like friend zone, where you go out on a date and just decide to be friends afterwards. But you expressly go on the website in order to do that.
Here's a thought.
We
have OkCupid and all the other ones that I would name, but I can't because I can't be asked. Why? Why stop there? Surely there's room for, like, a service to find wingmen.
What?
You know, wingmen.
But, yeah, I didn't get the first bit. I understand the wingmen bit. I don't understand what you mean with the entire sentence.
What if you want a wingman, but you don't have a wingman, so you want to find
him? Oh, sorry, I thought you meant, like a recognition service for wingmen. Like...
Well, that opens another can of interesting, but that would be the next stage if we got the service up and running.
I have a friend whose middle name is Wingman. Maybe she could endorse us.
Is she a wingman? A wing woman? Wing person?
Not really. She hates men, so...
So, surely she can help you pick out a target in a crowd?
She's not a hitman. She's a wingman.
She's a hit woman.
Well, I'm trying to think. There's a line about the friend zone. It's in my head. There's a guy. Oh, that was it. It's a guy described as just Friendistan, and it's a territory only to be rivaled by the inhospitality of the Western Sahara, the Atacama Desert, and Dante's Ninth Circle of Hell.
What you don't know is there's a smaller tent circle just inside the ninth called the Friend Zone.
What is that, guys? Ali Binazir or something. That was his name. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. But yeah, for the record, I used to be on Match.com for the briefest period of time, purely out of interest rather than actually wanting to hook up with anyone. But we can delve into it a little bit now, but like I was saying, I thought we'd save it all for...
Okay.
You know, and then we can, you know, I assume you have something special planned for your lovely lady for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we're going to go and watch Die Hard.
Oh, man.
And it's not my... It wasn't my choice. She's the one who wants to go. It's brilliant. I mean, I married the best woman in the world.
No, that's why I was sighing. I was like, I need a woman who would be like, you know what? Let's go see Die Hard for Valentine's Day. Like, you are getting the best sex tonight.
Sounds like what you need is a man.
For the last time, Simon, no!
I didn't say it was me. I'm just saying, you know, expand your options.
Well, you know, I have that kind of boyish good looks to me that, you know, it does attract the men of the male persuasion. So,
you know, male persuasion. So, men.
I don't want to say, you know, like raging homosexuals. I thought that'd be a bit inappropriate.
You could just say gay men. I mean, it's
gay. This is why we've got you here, Simon, so you can correct us and make these rookie mistakes.
Yeah, I can't
really
honestly
rookie,
ever
that's
see.
That's only a rookie mistake for like being in society. It's not.
I'm genuinely curious now, Simon. Would you ever describe yourself as a raging homosexual?
Not really. I'm not really raging in many ways, and certainly not in my
sexuality.
The expression of my sexuality. It's not really raging by any metric that I can think of.
More of a quiet simmer.
Yeah.
You're like a tepid bath of homosexuality.
Oh god!
Like some kind of gay dough in a bread maker. just gradually kneading over, getting warmer and warmer and warmer until suddenly, ding! Wholemeal.
I thought there was gonna be a fisting joke in there, but
I was gonna make it, but it's done now.
I couldn't spot the fisting joke. I couldn't spot the opening for it.
Oh, boo.
But I did need to say that pun.
You did.
I think he's infecting me, Steph. I think he's... I feel like I'm bringing my A game right now because I'm really tired. And it seems like my B game involves making a lot of horrible puns.
Well, I'm a bit concerned because you're catching that. I can only assume that it works in the reverse and Mark is becoming very slowly a tepid bath full of homosexuality. I mean, it's... I at the risk of sounding crass, I don't really want to be the measuring stick that compares you to.
I think it's more that there's a one-dimensional continuum, or maybe it's a discrete set, but there is definitely a one-dimensional line of different grades. And the A game is the tepid bath full of homosexuality. The B game is awful puns. The C game is too euphemistic for me to come up with any kind of answer.
It's a cold swimming pool of banality.
The C game is probably just sitting in a corner thinking about the lunch you had.
Just musing over a ham sandwich going,
Should have used butter.
If a podcast ever reaches that level, I'm walking away. I'm cashing in what little chips of dignity I have and leaving the podcast forever.
When our opening topic is, what about that ham sandwich you had for lunch?
Yeah, man, just I wish I'd used butter.
55 minutes of dead air interspersed with occasional dull thoughts on cold meats.
You joined Butcher's Hour.
Coming up later, honey roast ham, yay or nay?
I swear to God, I will walk away. I will walk away right now.
Nay,
and we speak to Stephen the Butcher, who quit because he was too short and the stakes were too high.
Oh my God almighty.
Oh, Christ. Oh. A bottle of
oh
piss.
Lord. Why? You monster.
Oh, come on. That was, you know, it was there. I had to take the opportunity to punt.
That was pretty good. I still hate you, but it was pretty good.
Oh, just... I hope you catch something. Nothing fatal, just enough to annoy you. That's what I
think. Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Or lemon Scurvy. Disease. It's like a step down. You don't die of it or anything. You just kind of feel a bit tangy. And every so often you just go... when you get that lemony taste in your mouth.
I just wake up tomorrow morning with rickets. Like, oh, damn it, Steph! Spend the rest of the week walking like a crab.
Yeah. I've heard that in the remission stages of rickets, it turns into crickets. And every time you stand still, you just get crickets chirping in the background.
I start rubbing my thighs together and making noises.
Yeah, and you ride the eczema vector out.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, that's put paid for that conversation, so...
Actually, talking of ailments and diseases, I went to my private medical appointment for my ears on the other day, on Monday.
Your private medical appointment?
Yeah, because I went through the NHS, National Health Service, my ass, and they...
Okay.
Continue.
Yeah, go on.
It was more the service part that I was getting irate about, because the doctor who saw me really couldn't care less and just wanted to get me out of his room to, you know, ship the next poor soul in so he could misdiagnose them as well. So unhappy with the fact that you know, backstory for listeners, I have tinnitus quite badly in my left ear. And so I finally decided to seek medical attention because it was really annoying me and keeping me up at night. So I went to see the first guy. After waiting like 7 weeks to get my appointment, like originally, like it took forever to have the appointment set, and then the appointment set date was 6 weeks from then. So it seemed like forever that I was waiting and you know, increasingly having more and more sleepless nights. So I saw the first guy. He ran a few tests and basically said, "Your hearing's fine. That's it." I was like, "Oh, great." So, you know, all these issues that I have, you know, the fact that I can hear loud ringing noise in my ear, the fact that, you know, it's keeping me up at night, the fact that I have this fullness feeling in my ear, which I attributed to a waxy buildup to start with, but, you know, obviously it wasn't that. And he's just like, no, you are fine, get out. So I, you know, dissatisfied with this resolution to the story, I sought private help. Got a second opinion, which I rang up for on Friday, and they said, "You can come in on Monday." I was like, "Oh, you've already won points in my book." The fact that I have to wait like 72 hours to see you, you know, it's great. So I went in Monday evening after work, and the guy ran some very similar tests on me to the first guy, and said that, you know, my hearing is fine. In fact, it's above average for someone my age. I very, very acute hearing. He said that, you know, there's no visible damage to my ears, there's no, you know, no, acoustically nothing is wrong with them, and he said probably there's nothing wrong with you, but probably is not good enough. And I was like, oh, finally someone who's on my wavelength, probably is not good enough. And then he proceeded to tell me that about 2% of the people who come to a doctor with my my problems, my tinnitus and the lack of any visible evidence of anything wrong with my ear, about 2% of them have maybe a tumor or something in their, like, behind their eardrum. Jesus, I was like, Christ. Great, so that would explain things, and that would also explain the fullness. Okay, right, I've got a tumor. So I've he's put in a request for me to get an MRI scan in about 6 weeks or so. I could have paid £700 and had it done tonight, but other than interfering with the podcast recording, I didn't want to spend £700 to get my brain scanned. So I'm now back on the NHS for a free MRI scan at a date yet to be appointed, but probably sometime in April. And then I'll find out not only do I have a brain, but if there's any damage or anything to my ear or any growths or anything. So I'll report back when I find out more.
Wow, okay.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say. Story. Yeah. 2%. Because I was reading something on tinnitus like a few weeks back, which didn't go into sort of a huge amount of detail about the background of the condition, but it did say that it's very often a psychological condition rather than something physical in the ear.
It can be, yes. It can actually be brought on by stress. I internalise a lot of things. I thought it could have been brought on by that. But the fact that I've had it at least noticeably for a year or so, I think it could be something I've had for a lot longer than that, which is where things get a bit confusing. Because I remember that, I'm not sure what silence sounds like, as strange as that actually sounds itself, because I'm so used to sleeping with like a computer or electronic equipment in my room, potentially on doing things or close by to other devices, that I just attributed that ringing noise to be from the machines themselves, like a byproduct of a computer being on standby or something like that. And I remember thinking this a long time ago, so I could have very well had this condition for a very long time, but just happened to have noticed it more in say the last year or so.
Mm. I get an occasional hypers ringing in one of my ears. It just sort of suddenly appears, but it disappears like after about 10-20 seconds or so. So I am not sort of, I'm somewhat hesitant to say that I have a case of tinnitus as well, but. Mm. As for the silence issue, there was one thing that my lecturer told me once in university, which was a story of a guy who went into an anechoic chamber, which is this room that's filled with a special kind of padding to kill off any type of echoes. It's used it's used a lot for getting certain audio recordings and doing psychoacoustic tests and the like. And the guy went in.
Did he shout echo and was really disappointed?
If he didn't do that, I'd be disappointed. But I digress. He went in, did, I think he was doing some recordings, went in, and then when he came out, he was talking to the sort of the technician there. He said, I went into this chamber, but I could hear two noises. There was a low-pitched noise and a high-pitched noise. The guy said, yeah, the low-pitched noise is your circulation and the high-pitched noise is your central nervous system.
Mm.
So it might be that as humans, we are incapable of hearing pure silence, even if we can conceptually think about what it might be.
Or are you saying that I have such good hearing that I can hear my central nervous system constantly?
Well, I just wonder, because you say you've got above average hearing. I'm just curious whether you're, hearing something in the other room. Like, maybe the guy next to you has a collector. Maybe he plays glasses.
I just have a street musician following me around like 20 feet behind me at all times playing the glasses. Is that?
Yeah,
maybe.
Maybe the street musician is really tone deaf and is playing the same pitch over and over and over again, not realizing that he's playing the same pitch over and over again. He's like, no, I need to calibrate all my glasses, right, they're the same size, got the same amount of water in it, not realizing that that's the complete opposite of what you're meant to do.
So really, there's the worst glass player in the world, and Martin Schneider's all going, "Fucking hell!"
It was you. It was because of you that I thought my ears were broken. Is how I imagine you might exclaim at him if you were to find out that your tinnitus was actually called by a person playing the glasses. He's been following you constantly this past year, playing 20 plus glasses all tuned to the exact same pitch. Or, you know, maybe you have tinnitus. I'm just going to give you both sides of the argument here to keep it balanced.
Well, I mean, if he, you know, the options at the minute are either he does have someone with glasses following around, or he has cancer of the ear. So I'm fairly sure I'm going to roll with the first one and hold out hope.
It was only 2% that have cancer of the ear. I mean, there's still the 98% of other people who don't have cancer of the ear, and the tinnitus is caused by something else.
The thing is, though, like, and in a way...
What's the chance... If I can just get this in quickly, what's the chance that someone has been following you for the past year, playing the spoons constantly with 20 plus spoons, glasses, playing with all
the
glasses
about 2%.
Tuned to the same pitch?
I would say 2%. It's potentially less than 2%.
Yeah.
If we're going to go with the bookies on this one, I'd say tumour outweighs street musician.
And
there's the title for this podcast.
Not tumour outweighs tumour.
Yes. But the thing is, though, like, you know, you can't really call it like a genetic condition, but I do like have cancer kind of along both genetic lines of my family, and right. You know, it would, you know, explain why I kind of feel this fullness in my ear. But I did have this little, and this sounds really kind of a little bit morbid, and obviously, you know, exaggerates how strange and twisted I am. But I had this, I don't want to say fantasy, but if you put the biggest inverted commas around that word possible, fantasy of them finding something in my ear, whether it's a tumour or a crayon or something, and taking this now dislodged piece of material back to the first doctor in some kind of polythene bag, like throwing it down on his desk and being like, "You're so shit, that was in there." And then just like walking, or maybe even just like dropping it on the desk and be like, "Mark out," and then just like walking away.
Yeah, I don't think they let you keep the things they remove from your ear.
Really?
Yeah, I'm genuinely sure that's not your property. I think
it's in me. I'm pretty sure it was like, yeah.
Yeah, but no, but I don't think it is your property after they remove it. I mean, finders keepers, I suppose. You know.
Yeah, the thing is, what's the hospital going to do with it? I mean, they could keep it to run tests on it, but what else are they going to do? They're just going to hide it in the bin, as it were.
I wonder if I can find a picture or something.
Are you searching, are you searching Google Images for pictures of tumours?
No.
Good. Just checking. After what happened last time, I gotta check these things.
I was gonna say, does this rule extend to things that you, like, maybe inadvertently insert into your body? Say, like, you sat on your Oscar statue and then went to the doctor, they removed it. Do they get to keep your Best Supporting Actress award?
Best Supporting Actress for Rectal Removal 2.
Oh, how embarrassing would that be if you went to hospital with, like, Best Supporting Actress in a Porn Movie trophy, like, stuck in your bum?
Oh, God.
Especially if you hadn't inserted it for any kind of sexual pleasure and you just sort of sat on it by accident. You're filling the dishwasher, you tripped on a loaf of bread or something, and you just fell backwards onto your Oscar that you'd placed on the floor. Oh, and you were filling the dishwasher in the nude.
Well, I always do that. I mean, I don't know about you, Simon, but I find the most free I can be is doing everything in the nude all the time.
Well, yeah.
I know, it's a constant fear when I lived with you that I would, you know, you'd just be wandering around, tackles swinging about, and I'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, put some clothes on.
Yeah, I assume you're referring to my dog. Please, his name's the Captain, and
Captain Sippercock.
And he's standing to attention.
God.
Do you put those like well done stars on your penis like every time? Like, oh, he's a 3-star general now.
Well, the way you called them well done stars just reminds me of the little sticky stars we used to get in primary school for good work.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Although, did your schools have to sellotape them on because the adhesive on them wasn't good enough?
Yes.
No. I went to I must have gone to a good school. Which is something
to a
I never
that
thought
spent of. Spent more of its budget on sticky stars.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when I was in like year 3 or year 4, and we had like this chart on the wall that. Like you got a little mark next to your name in a box every time you could do your times tables.
Sorry, You said little Mark, and I imagined a tiny you just put next to him.
Like, I was pretty short, and like when I was about 7 or 8, I was incredibly short.
We were all pretty short when we were about 7 or 8.
Not me. I've shrunk since. I was 7 foot.
Wow.
I got struck by a lift. It was terrible.
What I was going to say was we got like one of these like adhesive stars next to your name every time that you did your times table, like you did your 3 times table from 1 times 3 to 12 times 3. And I remember when you did your 9, and you had to say it out loud in front of the class to prove you'd learned it. And then when you got to, you finished your 9 times table, so when you got to 9 times 12 and did that, then you immediately got your mark for your 10 times table. And I always thought, well, what if you've not learned it? Like, you're just assuming we know how to do our 10 times tables, Mr. Bicknell. Like, what if we haven't? I mean, I obviously knew my 10 times table. I mean, they're, you know, a piece of piss. But
that's kind of why, because it's a piece of piss.
I mean, you know,
unless the school was cruel and it taught its students in not decimal, taught them in like hex or something.
We had to do a binary times table, so it'd be like 1, 1, 0. Or be like 1x10. It's very confusing. Actually, no. I had a teacher in year 9 called Mr. Renison, and his treat for us if we finished our class early was obscure times tables, usually starting around 16 or 17 times tables, and he'd go around the class in a very methodological fashion. But everyone cheated insofar as they'd count and work out what number they would be, calculate if they were like 12 times 17, and have the answer ready, and so like quick as a flash we'd, you know, produce the answer for him. He eventually got wise to this and then started picking people at random, and needless to say our skills at rapidly answering times tables questions diminished ever so much. But I think I kind of failed after about 10 or 11 times tables. Like, I remember 12 was pretty high for a time.
How long did it take this teacher to work out that that's what they were doing?
A little, at least preoccupied, like making sure everyone's getting the answer right. So it'd be like,
because
no,
if I was
you,
well, to check the answer, he was probably doing that in his head. That's at least that's what I
know,
would
he,
do. If I
he
was
a very
that
smart
time
person, especially when it came to calculations. So obviously, being a math teacher, it helped.
Yeah.
But no, he well and truly knew like all these times tables. I don't know like how far up he knew. He could, I don't know if he could do like his 84 times tables, but he probably could. But no.
No,
we didn't get gold stars when we got to about 14 years old, though, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, it's like, you've hit puberty, no gold stars for you. Instead, you get a...
Maybe there'd be less moody teenagers if they got gold stars.
No, I don't know about you, but I definitely recall being a teenager. No amount of gold stars would cure whatever ailed me then.
Yeah, when you're that kind of age, you sort of want to reject the fact, you want to forget that you were ever a kid, that you were ever small and cute.
And happy.
Yeah, you've got to kind of accept your existence as a depressed, angsty, sort of walking acne tank that's at war with the world.
Well, I like, because I occasionally dig out my old CDs, you know, because I don't really own much music now, I don't really have the time for it, I'm much more of a video games guy. But me and Mark used to listen to pretty much exactly the same music, and I imagine you did as well, Simon.
Hmm.
Well, I don't know. Simon's heard bands that haven't even heard themselves yet.
he was that kind of guy, was he?
No, not back then. I'm an ex-metalhead. I was very much into a lot of sort of alternative metal and new metal when I was sort of 14, 15, like Linkin Park, System of a Down.
Yeah.
It was Cold Chamber. My CD's over there, but I can't see from here. Who else? Name bands. You get the idea.
Yeah, I think I get the point. That's cool. We'll have a thing. I mean, I like.
You
Mark.
Said name bands, and I couldn't think of a single band ever.
It's always a problem, isn't it?
There's a word for that. I can't remember what it's called. Where when you put it on the spot, you can't answer a question, a really easy question. Like someone just jumped out and they're like, "What's 2 times 2?" And you go, seven? I don't know. Wait, go away. Ah."
And you can't remember what the word for that is.
That's Mr. Renison's math class all over again. There. What's 2 times 2? I don't know.
What's 9 times 1? Hardik.
But no, I listened to a lot of emo music as a teenager because I thought it made me look sort of misanthropic and interesting towards the opposite sex. I realise this now. At the time, I thought I was so switched on to the world around me that I was the only one among this horde of sheep that could actually see the... And now I realise, no, we were all just idiots. Like, as a teenager, I must have been a fucking unbearable. It must have been awful. But there's a distinct point I remember, like, at one point listening to this music and going, I used to hate everything. And in reality, I had a very nice childhood. I had lovely teenage years. I you know, there nothing, very little was wrong. And yet I wandered around looking like I was about to slit my wrists like some prick.
Have you heard the song Everyday Normal Guy by John LaJoie?
No.
It's fantastic. I was introduced to this song by Graham, Mr. Chappell, and he introduced me to this song not only by saying, Mark, someone wrote a song about you, but also by saying his use of the word motherfucker is inspired, and that is a direct quote. So obviously I listened to this song, and it's basically a white middle-class guy rapping about how his life is okay. And so it reminded me, because one of the lines, and possibly my favourite line in the song, is, my parents are really nice people, motherfucker.
It's that same logic that applies, like, one of the reasons I like The Lonely Island is that they're so wide, and they clearly come from, well, I don't actually know this, so if I'm wrong, feel free to correct me, but they clearly come from alright backgrounds.
They went to Berkeley, so I assume.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're just like, well, cool, that's my kind of music. It's just, you know, people taking the piss quite easily.
Yeah. I love, I recently re-listened to their song Japan, and I'd completely forgotten the entire point of that song was for their record label to send them to Japan to make a video. And I laughed so much listening to it again, especially when they get to the end part where they're talking about what they're going to throw in the river. But no, I thought it was, yeah, brilliant. I was a bit disappointed with their second album.
Well, I mean, they had some really good songs in there, as you well know, but overall it wasn't as strong. But this new one's shaping up to be quite good, although I felt this way about the second album.
Well, that was the thing, though. Like, their strongest songs on the second album are the ones they did the SNL Digital Shorts for.
Yeah.
But the most, like, 80% of their first album came from the Digital Shorts. So they kind of did those, then put that together as the album, whereas the second album, they wrote a lot more songs first and then did it. It's like Flight of the Conchords syndrome, where the first series of their TV show is all songs they'd already written, and they like made into they made episodes around the songs. But the second series, they wrote the songs to fit in with the show, and the show wasn't as strong for it. Yeah. But no, the third album for The Lonely Island, the minute I finished watching their video for YOLO, and it said like new album coming this year, I was so excited.
I imagine like me, you'd go.
It was a gasping moment. But no, like, as well, like, the minute I saw they did a video for YOLO, I had to send it to you.
I'm not proud of that.
Yeah, in so much as you started saying YOLO to mock YOLO, you've become one of these people who now uses YOLO as the assholes who use it do.
Yeah, I use it all the time, and it's only funny to me. Everyone else thinks I'm just a dick.
It's one of those things where if you try to sort of use it to mock it, you'll just end up using it. It's like wanting to mock leprosy by catching leprosy. It doesn't work.
Well, no, the reason I mock it is because I didn't realise what it meant when I first saw it. The only thing I thought it meant was because I read questionable content, the webcomic.
Oh, yes, and yeah, you thought it stood for you obviously like owls.
Exactly!
Well, it should stand for that.
So I'm there. I don't use Twitter very often, but I did consider tweeting... just seen a wicked horned one, YOLO. And everyone just be like, huh?
So to you, you're basically saying, I've just found an awesome owl. And to everyone else, they just read, I just saw a guy with a fantastic erection.
Yeah, a wicked horn on.
You must be like cracking company at like a bird sanctuary these days.
There are a pair of tits. Hey! Ornithology jokes.
I think That's actually the only ornithology joke in the world. I don't think there's any others.
I'm sure I've come up with one.
The lesser spotted, like, blue tit and stuff like that.
Yeah, there was... Oh, in our Year 9 SAT biology paper, there was a question that involved the life... I think the life cycle of the food chain of a sort of a series of things that live. And one of them was a bird that were called Great Tits. You could hear the sniggers throughout the exam. I just saw that. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Try not to laugh.
There was a friend of mine, and this just shows you how white Doncaster can be as a city of multiculturalness. But yeah, it was probably about our SATs as well. And you know those questions where it's like, you know, Paul and Simon have 5 marbles, Paul has 3, how many does Simon have? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Right? It names 2 people and then asks you to work out what quantity of an item they each behold. But you know, in the National Institute of Exam Papers or whatever it is, their efforts to appear multicultural, like our paper was like, Steve and Ranjit have 7 bananas. One of my friends came out of the exam, we were talking about it afterwards, he's just like, that one question really threw me. I have no idea what a Ranjit is. And I just thought, well, you know, that just goes to show you that it's not, you know, you should really kind of taper the papers for the audience. I'm sure there's probably some kids in a very, like, Indian area of England who are like, I have no idea what a Steve is.
What's a Jeff? Like...
Actually, speaking of Jeff, have you seen the new episode of Community yet, Steph?
No, because I'm a purist.
I haven't either.
See, you've let it die with Series 3 then?
Yeah.
No harm and no watching, is that the rule?
Well, I'll get round to it eventually, is my logic. Much like this latest series of How I Met Your Mother, I got home early one night and ploughed through the series, and actually, I think it picked up a little bit.
Series 9, seriously? Mm. Oh, we're on Series 8.
See,
my brother and I have a weekly phone call, which we've started naming, like, how annoyed are we with How I Met Your Mother? And just, like, go through how terrible it is these days. And we're like, we just don't think it's good at all. Like, there are very few redeeming episodes. We've got to the point where, instead of going, oh, it's a good episode last night, like, our highest mark is, it was alright.
Mm.
In the most kind of hipster way you can like something, it's just, oh, it's alright.
Mm, it's like, I don't hate this.
But no, the reason I bring it up, though, is because you know how Chevy Chase has left.
Yeah.
And there were, like, 3 or 4 episodes they hadn't filmed with him in. There's a large portion of the first episode in which he doesn't feature. And I was wondering if they must have filmed this after he had left. But I thought then it's rather strange them doing kind of episode 1 or parts of episode 1 towards the end of their filming schedule, unless they were refilming it because of some other reasons. But yeah. I decided...
They might have rewritten the script.
Yeah, potentially, but it's become... I'm going to start playing a game now every week, which is... guess what was filmed after Chevy Chase left, and just see how many scenes each week, because he barely featured in episode 1 as it was.
Just as a request, if you start doing that, can I have permission to send in any request to Match.com to get you laid, because that's just the lowest point you'll have reached.
I could probably reach much lower than that.
I've still got that sign-in sheet for Take Me Out. If you really want me to submit it, I can happily do it.
You did that.
Yeah, still got it saved. It's there. Fingers on the trigger.
The one thing I do remember is that you did try and sign me up to that My Single Friend. Mm-hmm. And I got the email saying, you know, your friend Stefan Sipica says this about you. Click confirm to appear on our website. I just thought, I'm not so desperate that I need the recognition of someone else that I'm desperate to appear on a dating website. If I ever hit rock bottom, I should know about it myself.
Yeah, I suppose.
But no, it's like, The problem, and I don't want to get into this too much detail because I was kind of hoping it'd be next week, but the problem I had when I was on Match.com for the short time that I was the, like, you'll see a profile picture, yeah, and it's like, it's alright. And then you think, oh, all right. And you don't read shit about someone. The first thing you do is you look at their pictures, which is why I only have one on there, or only had one on there, should I say. And you scroll through them and you suddenly realise that first shot has been meticulously chosen by the user to represent the absolute best angle and best light source that could be possibly chosen to make them appear at least vaguely attractive.
Yep.
So you scroll, like, they'll start, they'll be like, oh, she looks all right. And then you see the next one and she looks like a bit of a hippo. And you're like, oh, man. Like, and then I started thinking, why do this? Why not just put that one picture where you look okay? Why let someone see these pictures where you clearly don't look anywhere near as good as that original picture? You've clearly chosen that as your profile picture because that is the impression you want to give people. Yet you've insistently put on this other five or six images where you look god awful and like, I mean, fair enough, that might appeal to someone, but you've not put that as picture number one. You've put the one where you're pouting and flicking your hair and look slender, but you know you're actually
a chubster.
Yeah, a chubster. You're a human bouncy castle.
Call a spade a spade, Mark. Let's get on with this.
But yeah, it's bemusing the fact that they've you know gone to the extent of picking the photo in which they look the best, and then in the following four or five photographs proceeded to undermine themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I always think like this is a personal thing, and I want to talk to you about this at some point because I would quite like to go speed dating.
Really?
Even though I'm married, I don't really mind. I'm happy to ruin someone else's night. It doesn't really bother me in the slightest. I go home to a wife. But I would love to go purely for the fact that I could pretend to be anything I want and introduce myself in any way. And that's what I tended to do in website situations or on forums. I just make shit up. I've been an astronaut four times. Once in Russia, twice in America, and once for the former Soviet Republic of Uzbekistan. I think with one of the things I love about those photos, because you do have those really crap photos afterwards, and they're not crap photos, they're the ones that are okay. That's the issue, is that they'll put the best one out there, because let's be honest, when you go on a date, I know it's been a while for me, but when you go on the first date, they're not meeting you, they're meeting your representative. They're meeting the person you will say, look, aren't I brilliant? Ignore that. Ignore the fact that I pick my toenails. Ignore the fact that I fart loudly in public or that I jack off on the train. It doesn't really matter. Ignore that bit. I'm quite nice.
I can't imagine anything worse than trying to pleasure yourself while being tossed about. And I assume you mean at least the toilet on the train and not like in the aisle seat.
Oh, look, the worse it is, the more reason you've got to hide it. it's like the couple, you know, everyone has something in common with someone. It's like the couple that meet, probably one of them knocking on the door and going, I've just got to legally inform you I'm a sex offender, and the other one goes, oh funny, I've got to do that to you too. And she's like, where did you meet? Mum and dad? Coffee shop? Shut up.
Coffee shop for sex offenders. I wonder if there is such a place.
I really hope there isn't.
And if
there
is,
Mark can give it a cracking
name. I haven't
been
going to it inadvertently.
I was going to say, does the barista touch you? In a bad way, not in a kind of shake your hand kind of way, in a sort of cupping motion as he hands you your low-fat skinny latte.
Just don't ask for extra foam.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Yeah, do you want to go speed dating, Mark? I think that'd be a thing to do.
But the problem is that I would probably be so nervous that I would invent 25 separate personalities, and you know, depending on what the girl was like. Your father's a war veteran. I myself actually was in Vietnam, and just like pretend to be someone who I'm clearly not. And then when she goes, you know, you weren't in Vietnam, I go, well, you weren't there, man, you weren't there. It's just like suddenly start developing a twitch.
Lie of omission. If you never said that you were at Vietnam during the Vietnam War, you can get away with it.
It's true, yeah. Wasn't hiding in the bushes from the Viet Cong, that's for damn sure. I was, you know, just holidaying there.
Well, they're not mutually exclusive.
Is there still a Viet Cong to hide from, or
there is
have
in
they
your
moved
head.
On? Some kind of strange holiday where you go out and fantasize about hiding from make-believe enemies in shrubbery.
But we can do that in the New Forest if you want.
It's just LARPing, isn't it? We've taken it to a whole new level. Have we invented LARPing in Vietnam?
I was going to say, what we'll do, we'll, three of us will go into a woods, I'll climb a tree, throw rocks at you, and you pretend like you're under heavy mortar fire. LARPing.
And I'll fly over and drop the napalm.
Well, match.
Where would you get napalm? Like, you see, we'd have to bring... Maybe this is what your Canada trip... You're preparing to smuggle napalm into other countries. And, you know, you're testing the waters with the, you know, the whole Chicago to Canada trip.
Oh, well, thanks, maybe, Mark. You know... I'm going to have a great time with the fucking border agency now.
I'll just forward this podcast to all of Canada. I'll just at Canada on Twitter and then say, by the way, you aren't going to pat down Simon Harris when he walks through.
Well, I'd better get lubed.
You've been listening to the Candle After Podcast. Tonight, you've heard the vocalness of Simon.
You have indeed.
You've also heard the dulcet tones of Steph.
That's me. Goodbye.
And the smooth, silky voice of myself, Mark. Goodbye. But like I say,
what do you expect it to be? Do you expect it to be the cancer or the guy behind the glasses?
After he talked about it, I expect him to lose his hearing.
Well, I hope it's not that.
Well, no, it's irreplaceable.
Oh, irreplaceable.
Oh, shit, no! No, I've become one of you! Oh, God! No! Why?
There we
yes.
go. And now we're all horrible.
Oh, God, that's it. I'm done. Bastards! Oh God, how can I do that? That's so obvious. Oh.